Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
In this latest episode, your host, Lewis Irons, sits down with the Scottish FA's Head of Coach Education and Development, Greg Patterson, and the two are joined by Livingston midfielder, Marvin Bartley.
Greg, another podcast, another week goes by where we managed to get ourselves on Zoom call, and this week we're fortunate to be joined by Marvin Bartley. Marvin, a pleasure to have you on the podcast, and thank you for taking some time out to sit round and talk through with us.
No, thank you for the invite. As I've said, you know, it's been I've got a lot of time in the house, so you know, this is a welcome distraction for me. So thanks a lot for having me on.
Yeah, well, Greg, we've had current managers, we've had former managers, we've had former players. Here we have a current player, Livingston's Marvin Bartley. It's great to have him on and get a bit of valuable insight from his playing days, also as he looks to maybe turn into the coaching career. I know he's on his licences at the minute, so it's great to get some insight from him.
It is indeed. I think it's always important we talk about these podcasts making up or telling the story of people's coaching journeys. So it's important, I think, to get different takes on that coaching journey and, you know, people at different points on their coaching journey. As you've mentioned there, Marvin recently finished his B licence with us. He's starting his A licence this summer. Hopefully all going well given the current situation. And then obviously just Marvin's experience as well. He's been active himself very much on social media, trying to keep people engaged and informed and doing his own things on social media during this coronavirus crisis. So yeah, a good guest to have on by all means.
Yeah, Marvin, before we kind of go back and start at the beginning and talk through your early playing days and your experiences with different coaches through your career, just a word at the minute on this situation we find ourselves in. Of course, no training for you, no games. It must be a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I never realised how much I would miss football. You know, it kind of feels like I've gone into retirement almost. You know, you hear players speaking about the things that they miss, you know, when they're not in day-to-day, and it's kind of made me realise how lucky I am to be playing. Yeah. It's been very difficult, you know, not just the playing and training side, but, you know, being in and around the lads, just everything that I'm used to doing. So, yeah, it's been very, very difficult. As you said, I'm trying to tick over, but, you know, we're not going to be playing for, you know, the next couple of months now. So that's become even more difficult to do.
Greg,
you're not only trying to tick over, Marvin, in terms of your fitness. I'm noticing you, as I mentioned there, on the social media, you're trying to keep up that camaraderie amongst players and different things as well, aren't you?
Yeah, because, you know, everyone's at home at the moment. So I'm trying to keep everybody engaged. And I think in terms of social media, it allows players to speak openly, you know, because they're speaking to a current player. I'm not going to trip them up. You know, I'm going to allow them to talk about things that they want to talk about. And it allows them, you know, people see a different side to them.
Mm-hmm. You see, that has been one of the positives to this, Marvin, at the minute, this sort of engagement we are seeing online in particular when people are isolating away. There is still a connection there, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it helps players mentally as well. You know, we're so used to being geared to, you know, playing matches, to training, to talking about football. I think, you know, this hour and a half that, you know, I do with the different players allows them to have that release. And I think that's so important. You know, we talk about the physical side of things, but the mental side of things that a lot of players, not just players, but everyone's going through at the moment. I think this allows us a break from that. You know, the people watching in and the players that are talking, it gives us all a welcome break.
Yeah, and one of the things that it certainly shows me, Greg, is the I know the passion was always there for football, but the ways that people are getting creative to just keep the discussion going around football and keep giving ourselves a fix of football is good to see, isn't it?
Yeah, I think did we you and I speak previously, Lewis, on another episode about, I think, that loss of community.
Yeah,
is a good way of putting it. You know, it is a loss of community, not only for fans, for spectators, for clubs, but, you know, the players as well, players, coaching staff. You know, we've spoke to kind of all those kind of people on this podcast, and it is that loss of community. And it's although we're apart, we're still trying to stay together as best we possibly can in these different, I suppose, this new norm as it's becoming now for us.
No, well, I guess, Marvin, before we kind of get right into the thick of it, as I said, with all these things that you're doing to keep engaged with teammates, with former teammates online, I guess there's always the other side of it as well, where you're having to keep your routine up, your fitness. We spoke on the podcast about how important a routine can be when the days are maybe starting to blur. Has that been a big part for you?
Yeah, a huge part. You know, doing my runs, I'm also trying different fitness stuff. You know, I'm doing like HIIT classes that I wouldn't normally have time to do. So I'm trying to keep myself mentally going by, you know, not doing the same old runs, the 10Ks, the 5Ks. I'm trying to do different things. So I have to actually concentrate on what I'm doing. You know, I could go and do a 5K run now. I'm not saying it'll be the fastest because I'm getting old now, but I can do it. A 10K run, there's not a lot of thought behind that. So, you know, YouTube and the internet's been absolutely massive in terms of, you know, me going on there and finding different classes and doing things that I wouldn't normally be able to do. So I'm trying to find some positives, you know, during obviously what is a difficult period.
Yeah, for sure. And that touching on technology there, Greg, we know well and truly just about how important that's been, particularly in your side of things and coach education. It's been huge.
It has been huge. And I've just left our group of player and coach development managers and the rest of the coach ed team as they try and furiously put together a level one course, which will hopefully serve as well. And you know, Marvin's talking about, you know, his coaching journey. That will hopefully help people on their coaching journeys, whether they're players and might be interested in that, or whether it's people just volunteer coaches just starting on their journey. So the social media side of it is, that's social media and technology side of it is the way in which people are able to stay together. And I'm back to that community type spirit. You know, that's the way we can keep the community together. If you are truly isolating, as most of us are at this point in time, unless you're a key worker, then you're stuck at home. But you can get a laptop or an iPhone in front of you or an iPad or whatever the case may be and connect just exactly how we're doing to record a podcast that hopefully then connects further and you know, engages more people.
Yeah. And let's get into it, Marvin. Let's go back to your earliest memories from when you were playing and some of the coaches you played under. How were those earliest stages in your development? How crucial are coaches when dealing with players at a young age?
Massive. You know, and, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, talk about their journey as a footballer and the coaching side of things. And they're very afraid to say that, you know, you can take things out of negative managers or negative coaches. Yeah. And that's one thing I've always tried to do. You know, I started playing football around 10 years of age. And from then to probably 16, you know, you just want to play matches. So you're not really, you know, worried about what coaches are doing. You're not too switched on to what they're doing. But from 16 onwards, I think I've taken a lot in terms of that. And, you know, you have people back then who have been extremely creative. Now I look back, I think some of my coaches around, you know, the 16 to 18 gap, although I was semi-professional, they were probably ahead of their time. You know, we had a guy called Simon East who I actually did a FIDO course, which was like part-time college, you know, in 3 days playing football. And he was brilliant. You know, he was actually part of the English College Football Association down there. So we had a representative team that I managed to be a part of. But his coaching was fantastic. And I think he was the first person I saw coach who made me think, you know, I want to do this in the future.
In terms of football in itself, Marvin, was it always something that you had that drive and aspiration to do, to become a footballer, to have a career in football? Or was it something that you naturally found you had an ability for?
I think it kind of fell upon me. I wouldn't say I have a natural ability because I'm not sure how many fans appreciate the way I play, but it wasn't something that I had a drive for from the start. You know, I really didn't like football up until I joined a team at 10. I've got two older brothers and, you know, they'd probably say to you, I used to run when they were playing football, pick the ball up and run off because I had no interest in it, you know, but they didn't force me into liking football. They allowed me to, you know, develop my own love for it. Which I think is extremely important with kids nowadays. You have to allow them to, you know, go and do other sports if they want to, and they'll come back to football if it's meant to be. And I just found that I was pretty good at it, you know, and kind of the love picked up the older I got. I was in an academy from 10 to 14, which I wasn't really enjoying. And my mum was, you know, really understanding, and she allowed me to come away from that. I went back to play Sunday League football, so I got my enjoyment again, probably from 14 to 16 years of age, and then it began to get more serious. But I think, you know, if I'd have had pressure put upon me as a kid to play, and pressure put upon me to keep performing when I was at Reading and I wasn't enjoying it, I don't think I'd be a professional now. Because, you know, I think you see too many kids are forced into having to love football, and they get to their 20s and they've just had enough of it. So I think my paths allowed me to, you know, continue to love football to this day.
It's a great story, that, isn't it, Greg? A great insight into, I guess we talk about it a lot in our line of work with the let them play messages that is put on kids at a young age. And when you hear it firsthand from Marvin, it kind of hits home just how important it is.
Oh, it really is. And as you say, it's that full journey as well. I'd be interested to ask Marvin, you know, you talked about starting to play at 10. What were you doing previous to 10? Were you doing different sports, or what were you doing at that time?
Yeah, I was playing cricket. I was doing a bit of athletics. I was doing a bit of boxing. It's whatever took my fancy, you know. And my mum would allow me to do all these different sports, which was huge. As I said, I had two older brothers, so sometimes she would say, well, you have to play cricket with them. And I wasn't very good at cricket, but I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed trying to hit the ball. I think it, you know, it helps me probably develop other skills like hand and eye coordination at an early age that I might not have got if I just continued to play football thoroughly. And, you know, so, yeah, I was playing different sports, and I think it definitely helps doing that.
Yeah, see, that in itself for me, Lewis, is an interesting one, you know, because you see so many academies now, professional or calling themselves professional, you know, under sixes and under eights and all this type of thing. But then there's the other side of the coin, you know, that early specialisation isn't necessarily a good thing. So there you have Marvin talking about all the different sports he played right until the age of, well, he started playing football, he was 10. I'm assuming that was grassroots football, and then, you know, starting to take it more seriously even by the time he got to 16, 17, 18.
Yeah. And you also spoke about it as well, Marvin, playing with your brothers as well. Am I right in saying you played with them early in your career?
Yeah, I did, yeah. So it just so happened after doing my my FIDO course, which was a college course from 16 to 18, the other side of that, I wasn't really getting the first team football that I desired, and I felt that I needed to develop as a player. So my brothers were playing non-league for a team called Burnham, and, you know, I went and played with them there, and then eventually played at Hayes with them as well, which was a good thing. And also part of my story, I try and say to young players now, I was released from Burnham at 19 years of age, and I could have allowed that to stop me from playing. I could have allowed that one coach's opinion to make me think, you know what, you're not going to make it. But it made me more determined, and, you know, football's a game based on opinions. And, you know, if he was a manager at a professional club, the first professional club I went to, maybe I wouldn't have got a contract, but it was somebody else. So, you know, their opinions differed, and one believed in me and one didn't.
Yeah, Marvin just keeps hitting on these good points that we like to talk about, Greg. When a game of opinions is a great thing to say, when we, particularly just from this podcast alone, like to get different voices, different people contributing to effectively educate and help aspiring coaches or people listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that difference of opinion could also be looked at as, you know, a resilience, developing a resilience, because it's one person's opinion, but not everyone's. And you know, again, as you say, calling on recent episodes, and I think, I can't remember who it was that was chatting about, you know, that ability to believe in yourself and keep plugging away and hopefully getting the break elsewhere. You know, Marvin spoke about not getting the first team football that he craved, but he didn't give up. You know, I don't know, he's probably better to tell me, did he try harder? Did he work harder? Did he do different things? But I suppose developing that resilience and trying to develop himself in different ways to eventually make that breakthrough.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Marvin, because you've already touched on it when we were chatting about the current football shutdown that we're in the middle of. But mentality, mindset, so important at this point in your career as well. But early on in particular, you obviously didn't let that knock you. Did it make you stronger, that slight knock that you took?
Yeah, I think it had to make me stronger. I think I had to become stronger. I think if I didn't have the mentality that, you know what, Marvin, you are good enough, but you're not going to fit into this team, you'll fit into another team. I think if I had that kind of mindset where I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to give up now, it wouldn't have helped me in my football career. And I think all young players and, you know, young coaches, because it will happen with coaches as well. You go and try and put a session on for a certain team and it might not go well. And we've all been there. You know, you can't lose, you know, what you're trying to do, because, yeah, it might not work with that group of players or with that football club. It will work with another football club. And I think that's what we have to have, that self-belief. And I think it's so important that we believe in ourselves and you know, we'll find the path that's there for us.
Yeah. That's a great point to make, isn't it? Particularly when it when you can relate that to coaching, I guess you're always going to be taking knocks throughout your career. It's not just this early stage where you're a young player trying to make your way in the game. There's going to be stages when you're a relatively young or inexperienced coach. And even later in the game, experienced coaches will get those knocks all the time, Greg, won't they? So it's a constant curve in the game.
They will. And you know what? And those knocks might just be week to week or even day to day on the training pitch as well. As Marvin said, if something doesn't go well, that doesn't mean to say it's rubbish. It doesn't mean to say the practice is crap. Please excuse my French. What it maybe means is that you maybe need to work at it.
Yeah.
You know, and you maybe just keep the time allocated to it. You know, if you've planned and prepared your session well and you want to do a particular practice or a particular small-sided game or whatever the case may be, conditioned game for 20 minutes, and it doesn't work particularly well, then that doesn't mean to say you throw it up necessarily, but what you've got to do is go back and reflect on it. And maybe if you tried it the following week or even the following day, it could work so much better because the penny could just drop with the players, or maybe you convey it in a different way so that it works better. So yeah, you're right, it's that. It's not only the resilience and the mindset that we're talking about, I think it's also that ability to self-analyse and reflect on maybe what you've done as a coach to see how you can make things better as well.
Yeah. And then, of course, Marvin, in the next chapter of your career, if you like, or before you came up to Scotland, you know, you played with Burnley and Brighton as well. So there was kind of experiences in there that I'm sure Bournemouth and Burnley you played with, you must have moments in your career that learning from coaches that maybe took your game to the next level, could you say?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I first went into Bournemouth, I think that was a vital time for me. I had Eddie Howe, who's now the manager of the first team, had recently just retired. I think he was about 28 at this point. I was going in as, you know, a 20, 21-year-old. He was a first team coach under Kevin Bourne, who's been assistant to Harry Redknapp at various different places, and Rob Newman. But what Eddie did with the younger players is that we used to do our normal team training, but three afternoons a week, he would do position specific with a young group of us. And I think that was my first coach. He made me think, although I said like Simon Nees was important, I was working with Eddie Howe, you know, three times a week now, and I was seeing it in a professional environment. I was thinking, you know, I want to be like this man. You know, I've taken a bit of Simon Nees, but Eddie Howe definitely had that impact upon me and other young players who I still speak to now as we are getting older and going into coaching and whatever else. He's had a huge impact upon us because he would, you know, work on things that I would need to work on as a centre midfielder, but sometimes I'd have to fill in at centre half because we were doing striker work because this group had people in various different positions. So I wasn't only learning about my position, I was learning about other positions, and the information he offered up at that point, you know, made me think, well, do you know what? I could get a bad injury in 7 years' time. I could be in the same position as Eddie Howe. So it's now not only time to be taking note mentally of what's going on, it's about writing it down now. And you know, you want to be a coach after you retire. You want to be like this man to start taking notes. And luckily, I didn't do it straight away. But after a couple of years, I did begin to do it. And, you know, that's allowed me to have the black book that I have now.
Yeah. Do you think about you that, you know, the way you're talking about Eddie there, it's quite fascinating to listen to. But when Eddie Howe's career came to an abrupt end like that, and the way he developed into a coach pretty rapidly and successfully, does that inspire you as you consider coaching down the line, Marvin?
Yeah, it definitely inspires me, but it also touches on the mental side that, you know, you and Greg had spoken about, because Eddie Howe's journey, even though he got that coaching job, when Kevin Bond got sacked, he was then demoted from first team coach to under 13 manager. You know, so he showed a mental strength there that, you know, probably a great example for any coach, because he didn't give up. He got demoted to under 13 and didn't say, well, do you know what? I've had enough of this football club. I want to go elsewhere, or I'm going to settle for doing this. He kept working hard. And then 6 months later, he was in the first team job. So he's a perfect example for me as a coach, you know, the sort of route I want to head down and the mentality that he showed there. I need to develop that. So yeah, he's a great example for me.
Yeah, that is something that when you hear Marvin talking about, Greg, is something that people have to be prepared for when it comes to the world of coaching. I mean, Eddie Howe's story might be one thing, and it's quite fascinating that rise and fall and the way that he got his career going like that as a manager. But to take that on, and you have to expect these sorts of things as a manager and be prepared for them, I guess.
And being prepared is the crucial bit. And Marvin said it himself there, didn't he? He said he never did it at first, but then he realised he had to and start compiling that black book that he talks about. So that, I suppose, that presence of mind, that trigger at some point to say to himself, do you know what, I should start taking a note of all these coaching practices. It's amazing now the amount of head coaches or coaches working in the game that have done that and will always reflect upon and look back on those practices that managers maybe did or head coaches maybe did to them years ago that stand the test of time. And I think I'm back to that kind of reflection that I was chatting about a minute ago. I think that allows that reflection, the skill of reflection, I suppose, to increase within the person to then know what's good, what's bad, what worked well, what didn't work so well, and then what can implement again to make things better and kick on from there.
Yeah, and then of course, Marvin, your career did come up here, it came to Scotland, and obviously Hibs, you must have some very good memories at initially.
Yeah, some great memories, obviously, playing-wise, you know, winning the Scottish Cup. Yeah. Getting promoted, and for that kind of Hibs journey that I had, it showed me another side of coaching, because as I said, I've had good and bad coaches all the way along. I think as a complete coach, probably Eddie Howe's the best in terms of on the grass and off of it. I've had Sean Dyche, who had the presence, you know, at Burnley, who he was brilliant. You know, he walked into a room and you instantly took notice. But what Sean Dyche showed me was that not all managers are going to be able to do. Not he's a bad coach, but he knew that wasn't his strongest part. So he got a coach in. So management's not just about, you know, somebody thinking, I'm going to do all these things, I'm the manager. It's realizing, well, I'm not good at this, so I'm going to bring somebody in who is good at this, and creating a management team, you know, that's stronger for it. So yeah, Sean Dyche was brilliant for me. Then I came up and Alan Stubbs was coming into his first job at Hibs after being at Everton. And again, he did things slightly differently. And I've learned from that. Neil Lennon came in, again, kind of similar to Sean Dyche, where he's a presence. He's not really a coach, he's a coach, but he's a presence. He's the best motivator I've ever had. So all these clubs that I've had have shown me, you know, different things. And just touching back on, I was talking about the Black Book, it's not just coaching sessions that I have in there. It's when I've been into my administration twice and how I dealt with that as a player, you know, having no money because I'm just coming through. And I've actually gone back and began to answer these questions. How would I deal with that as a manager? If my team goes into administration, I know how a player felt because I've been through it. I've got it written down. I go back now and answer it and be like, well, this is what I would do as a manager to try and, you know, no one's going to be happy during a situation, but try and keep everybody calm and let them know we're all going in the same direction and I'm working for them. And that's what, you know, the managers at the time probably didn't do that great. It kind of felt like it was us against them. I think we could have been together more, and that's something I've learned from. So I learned from good and bad.
Yeah,
Lewis. I think just that, those learning opportunities. You know, some people can go through their career plain sailing, if you like. You know, yeah. For you to have experienced administration twice is, there's some fantastic learning opportunities for you, surely.
Yeah, they're huge and absolutely huge. And as I said, I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, but to have gone through them and come out the other side, you know, people would pay for that experience because honestly, it was a real roller coaster. You know, football as a career is a roller coaster anyway, but those two times when we went through that, you know, just I couldn't, you know, put a price on that experience.
Yeah, so you've now had two administrations in a coronavirus crisis.
Yes, I started to think that maybe football wasn't for me.
It must be those moments, Marvin, that you find out a lot about your character and yourself, as well as those around you as a player. And then I guess if you try to put that into practice and what managers must learn from those periods of adversity, that'll be when the true colours really come out, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you're going through those times, it's so important that you do have good characters around. You know, Sean Dyche once said to us that misery loves the best friend. You have energizers and you have zappers. And he wanted within his squad energizers. And when he first said that, I was like, I don't really understand this. Yeah. Then I began to see it because people began to get dropped out of the squad. And they were the miseries and the energy zappers he was on about. And they would try and pull other people in. They wouldn't like being by themselves. But he said, we can eradicate them out of this squad by all being energizers, because when they realize that they can't put anybody else into their moan and groan group, then they'll either go, they'll either join us and be energizers, or they'll leave the club. And you know, he was correct in that. And as I said, like, it's so important to have the right characters. You can be the best coach in the world, but if you don't have the right characters within your dressing room, it's so difficult. And I suppose it was all part of management and coaching, isn't it? You know, recognising these things.
Some of the points that Marvin's made, Greg, I just want to kind of go back on, particularly in the last answer there where he's talking about the different type of coaches he's had. You know, Neil Lennon, the motivator, he's, you know, Sean Dyche, who puts, you know, a great team around him, and then Eddie Howe, who on the grass, off the grass, is just an all-round terrific coach. The type and style of manager that you can get, I guess you'll see it firsthand when you're taking through guys in the coaching pathways, but there are just so many styles to management that I guess it's all down to the personality of the person at the end of the day, that style is what they adopt.
Yeah, and again, that kind of self-realisation of what type of person and coach they are, and it kind of reminds me of was it Walter Smith or Archie Knox? One of them tells a great story about, you know, when they went into work at Manchester United at first, and they were meant to be there as the first team coach, but of course, Alex Ferguson was still doing all the coaching. Mm. It wasn't until after two or three days, what the hell have you brought me here for? Well, you're my assistant coach. And he says, but I'm meant to be, you know, I'm meant to be coaching. That's what I need to do. That's my strength. Your strengths are in management. And it's kind of working and feeling that through, as you say, so that, you know, people can work to their strengths. So, you know, Alex Ferguson eventually became that manager, didn't he, as his career evolved. And as your career does evolve, you probably do take, you know, your strengths maybe get stronger, and your weaknesses can get weaker if you've got the right people around you that allows you to kick on and do the things that you're the best of your ability. So you're right, it's all different people, and Marvin's obviously get, you know, he's got a great experience there, breadth of experience to call on all those different managers and you know, draw upon their good things and their things he might improve on that will hopefully stand him in good stead going forward into coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, Marvin, with Livingston as well, you are obviously doing your coaching licenses at the minute, but as a player, how have you seen your personality evolved as you've got more older and more mature?
You know, I think probably Livingston's the first club I've been at. You know, I touched on it a little bit at Hibs, trying to help the younger boys, but I think Livingston's allowed me, obviously, because I am coaching the reserves, but also the younger boys in the first team, so I can kind of play that Eddie Howe role. You know, after training, we can do position-specific stuff, and, you know, there's a great group of boys there who want to learn, so it allows me to express myself on that side. You know, I'm very much still a player, you know, first and foremost, but I am... and the club are very aware that I want to go on to coach and manage after. So I touch on both things. In terms of the first team, I take those smaller groups, and that allows me to, as Greg was saying, put on sessions. And listen, not all of them work. You know, I put on some sessions and I think, you know, this isn't working. Normally I try them with the reserves, if I'm honest, before bringing them to the first team. But I've done stuff with the reserves and it hasn't worked. And I've kind of reverted to type thinking, like, I know this does work. So I've always got a backup plan that I know will work. But I'm always going to try and keep evolving myself as a coach and trying new things, because should I get that opportunity to be a first team manager or coach, I want to have, you know, X amount of sessions that I can draw on. And I think we spoke about mentality a lot here. I think it's important that keeping the players engaged, you know, it's about putting sessions on. There's all different types of possession sessions, you know, but there's no point putting the same possession session on for a whole season, because after a while, boys go through the motion. You know, you can make variations to it that don't overcomplicate it. You get the same end goal, but it makes them think. And all the reading that I've been doing, obviously during this time off, I'm trying to take the opportunity to do that, has kind of pointed down that way as well. It's about getting players to think. It's about getting them to think when you're putting sessions on, because then they get something from it. You know, it's not about just, you know, doing the same things, repetition. It's not the way.
Now, when you talk about the position-specific sessions you do, Marvin, you're obviously more comfortable working with midfielders, are you? Or do you try and stretch yourself and work with different positions?
Do you know what, Greg? I find myself more comfortable working with strikers. Really? And I don't know... Yeah, I have no idea why this is.
That was your finish at Hearts in December. A bicycle kick finish.
I don't know who I thought I was then. I think it is maybe, I find it easier to work with strikers because it normally ends up putting the ball in the back of the net. And that's what everyone loves to do. You know, and obviously Lyndon Dykes at the moment, who I'm extremely close with, we do a lot of sessions together. And it's not, I'll admit, you know, the sessions I put on with Lyndon, they aren't from Marvin Bartley thinking these things up. It's going on YouTube. And I remember England had a striker coach. They brought in a striker coach and were one of the first countries to do it. I take a lot of his sessions and put them on with Lyndon. And, you know, when you see boys, and not just him, other young boys, well, you see them begin to develop and take these things on board. And, you know, I'm not taking credit for any of the goals he's scored, but you kind of see, you know, he's working on these things and then he's getting the end results in games. It's fabulous for a player, for a friend, but also, you know, for a coach. And that's one thing, you know, I don't ever think that I know everything about coaching, but I can learn everything about coaching, and that's what the internet is kind of there for. So strikers are probably the easiest one for me to work on, but I work on all positions, you know, every single position.
Yeah, I know you said there, Marvin, that you're not going to be the one to try and take any credit for Lyndon's goals, but I guess when you are putting that work in and you've got a close relationship with someone, it must be giving you a very good taste of, you know, the kind of small rewards that can come from coaching, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And he's shown me this as well because he wants to learn. He comes to me. Where at the start when he first came, it was me nagging him. Now he comes to me and says, can we work on this? And that, there's no better reward, I don't think, as a coach, when somebody comes to you and they're enjoying what, you know, you're doing with them. And the perfect example for Lyndon is, I remember the goal he scored against Celtic when he lobbed it over the goalkeeper. If you look the week before, he missed the same opportunity. He probably easier one against Rangers. Yeah. And then he worked on that. He came to me and said, let's work on that. And that's something you can replicate. But, you know, you're throwing a ball over the top. He's running through the open goal and he's scoring. And, you know, to then see it, you know, normally it will take months to, you know, see somebody improve something. He did it in a matter of, you know, days. Yeah. And that's fantastic to see. And, you know, that, and he's probably taught me that even more so, you need those sorts of players around you that want to learn, that want to develop, that want to kick on. So I've helped him, but he's also helped me.
Yeah. I see that culture you're talking about there, that you're helping each other. You talked earlier about Sean Dyche, you know, talking about energizers and miseries and zappers. Is that something, Holtie, is that something Gary's maybe developed in that squad to allow you guys to come together to do sessions for each other and things? Is that something, is that a product of what Gary's done at Livingston?
Yeah, definitely. Gary allows me to do, you know, certain things, but he's created a great team, you know, a team full of energy. There's no zappers in there. And obviously I'm at the age now where if that was beginning to happen in the dressing room, then I'll put a stop to it before the manager has to. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of given me that free rein to do it. So Gary realises that, you know, what each player is good at. And he realises that, you know what, I don't always have to come down on the boys. I can allow Marv to do it. But he very much put us in the structure and then he allows us to play from that in terms of coaching, playing, whatever. So he's been fantastic. And as you know, he's an unbelievable coach. You know, he's taught me some great things, an unbelievable coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that there's no coincidence in the success that you guys are enjoying on the pitch when you've got that sort of manager in charge that, and more importantly, what you're talking about, that atmosphere as a group just sounds like it is, if not the biggest factor, but a huge factor in how well you guys are doing.
I think it's the biggest factor. I really do, because I do think, you know, and I say this to the boys openly, if you take, you know, four or five of us and put us into different teams, we won't be as effective as we are together. And, you know, that's something else that, you know, from a coaching point of view, where Sean Dyche, as I said earlier, brings people together, you know, that complement each other, let's say. You can do that also on a football pitch. And Livingston show you that, because we're punching well above our weight. But that's not down to luck. That's down to, you know, a coaching team, putting a team together. There's probably a majority of us are misfits, you know, the unwanted players. But you can make that work, you know, and play to a style that not everyone might not enjoy, but it's the best style that will allow you to get the best out of your players. And I think that shows a different side of coaching. Yes, we want to always be a Pep Guardiola, we want to play from the back, we want to do this, that and the other. But listen, sometimes you're not going to get that opportunity. You're not going to get those top-class players. So you have to work with what you've got. And I think Livingston are a perfect example of that.
Yeah,
It is, and we spoke recently in the podcast again, Greg, about managers either finding a way to win or trying to stamp their authority and keep their playing style. I guess by the sounds of things with Gary Holt, the way he manages, he's got a bit of both there. He's got a style that he knows is works for him. Ultimately, it's a way of winning.
It's worked for him, certainly at Livingston. But I think if you were to go back to previous jobs, you know, he might have been completely different. So he's had to be a bit of a chameleon evolve and adapt, exactly. And it's an interesting question that we always like to throw at course candidates on coach education courses is, you know, do you go from club to club with your own playing philosophy, or do you have to adapt? And, you know, what is it about? Is it about the players trying to fit the system, or, you know, you finding a system to fit the players? And, you know, how does the coach then deal with that? And, you know, that then would involve bringing a lot of players in and out. And as Marvin's maybe touched on, maybe Gary's not had that opportunity at Livingston. You know, he's not got an embarrassment of, you know, money.
Yeah,
there. So he's had to probably come up with something that suits that players, as you say, done magnificently well to be punching, as Marvin says as well, above their weight to be able to do that.
In terms of the managers that you've worked with as a player, Marvin, in terms of adapting to that and that maybe having to change their style to make it cater, would Gary be one of the ones that you consider being one of the best you've worked with and seen do that?
Yeah, I definitely believe so. Listen, I'm probably quite annoying for managers because I'll sit down with them for an hour and I'll try and pick their brains, and that's just the way I am. I want to constantly learn. So Gary probably said, "Oh, Mark's always in my office," but I want to learn from that. And I actually asked him that question, you know, do you have a philosophy that you try and stick to? And he says, no, I work with the players that I have. He said, some people might say that's right, some people might say that's wrong, but he doesn't have a specific philosophy. He said, you know, if he went into Celtic, obviously he wouldn't play the same way he plays at Livingston, which I think is probably quite obvious. But, you know, being able to admit that, because I'm kind of the opposite, but I still take on what he says to me because it's living proof of him doing it, you know. So it's so good. I'm not saying that, you know, I go in there and we always agree on things, but, you know, I take away from what he's saying to me, and I definitely valid his opinion is valid for me. So, he's been brilliant in adapting from, you know, in answer to your question, from team to team.
Yeah.
I guess it's quite obvious, Marvin, that it would change. Do you think it is? Do you think, I'm maybe just throwing this one out here, but do you think like owners or club chairman or whatever would look at a Livingston and say, we're not interested in Gary Holt because he plays that way, so we don't want to play that way, so therefore we won't take. Whereas we know that Gary would be able to adapt and would be able to get probably more out of the team that they're the chief exec of.
Yeah, I Greg, what you touched on there in terms of other teams looking at him and saying we don't want to play that way, I think that's probably stopped him from team from even approaching him, kind of thing, even approaching a club about him. I think in football that there are some narrow-minded people who think, oh no, he's definitely play that way no matter where he goes.
Yeah.
But I know firsthand that he's a good enough coach, and he has other sessions that he puts on him, some training sessions he does with us, that he can go the other way and he can make teams play the other way, like play from the back and all this sorts of things. But let's be honest, we're not good enough to do that. We're not good enough as a team collectively to do that. Yes, we have some good players. Yes, we play in the final third, we try and get it down and play, but playing from the back, I think, would cause more problems than it would help.
Yeah. I mean, there's been plenty of examples of that in football, not just in Scotland, but all over the world, where managers have maybe been a bit stubborn with the way they want to be, and they perhaps don't have the personnel to carry out what they want and don't get the results. So I guess not being too stubborn sometimes is a quality managers need, and being able to adapt to what you've got is huge, Greg, isn't it?
Absolutely huge. And it's that ability to know, it's cutting your cloth to suit, I suppose, isn't it? And here we're talking about Gary, who's done it fantastically well. And as you say, you know, Brendan Rodgers, for example, was criticised because he wouldn't necessarily change when they get into Europe, you know, and maybe European results did suffer a little bit because of that. But you know, who's to say that, you know, Brendan, you know, exactly what Marvin said there, you know, maybe he's recognised that Livingston can't maybe play out from the back that he would like to do. But maybe Brendan's recognised other things that he just thinks that Celtic team at the time doing it about, you know, standing by your beliefs.
Yeah. Marvin, I guess when it comes
to... talking on the what Quinn just said there in terms of like changing, Paul Heckenbottom, I think, you know, for me, was a fabulous coach. Actually unbelievable. And I think the problem that Paul had at Hibs is that he wanted to change the style too quickly. I think he wanted to change that total possession, that dominant team. And up here, it's very difficult with Celtic, Rangers, you know, with their budget. And you've got Aberdeen that are just behind them. I think that's why Hibs found it so hard, because they tried to go from one style to another ever so quickly. Mm. And like Greg said, you probably can get to where you want to go. And I think Paul would be honest enough that he'd probably do it a lot slower than what he actually tried to do. He tried to have a massive overhaul in the summer and it just didn't quite work out. But again, I didn't start a game underneath him, but I would always say to people, he is an unbelievable coach. Was absolutely top-notch, brilliant. But I just think maybe, and he probably admit this himself, they probably tried to run before they could walk in terms of, you know, getting to that end goal.
Yeah, I think it's a great point to make, Marvin, because I kind of cast my mind back before I worked with the Scottish FA. I was at Motherwell and Stephen Robinson was in charge there, and his initial style of play got criticised a lot, the 3-5-2, hoofball, people called it. But at the time, he didn't believe he had the players to play a different style of football. He gradually changed the style of football, and then all of a sudden you've got Motherwell playing some really fluid, attacking, attractive football, and he's getting praise from everywhere. And it's funny how, while results maybe were still good in that initial sense, the style of play that a lot of times managers get judged on, isn't it? That's quite a hard thing to kind of adapt to as a manager.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I think sometimes managers allow that pressure to come up on them. Yeah. Rather than, like you say, Steve, like he kind of, you know, went down the route that, you know, we're going to play this way because it's best suited. And like you say, now Motherwell, I've seen the transition from Motherwell from when I first played against them to now. You know, they're a totally different team. And, you know, obviously at this moment in time, they're riding high in the league. And he's probably a perfect example of showing, listen, we will get there, but it will take time. I can't do it in 6 months. You know, it might take me, you know, 4 years or whatever, but we will get there. And I think that's important as a coach to have your philosophy, know you want to get there, but also realising, okay, I don't have the players to do that right now, but over the next, you know, 4 or 5 transfer windows, I'll try and bring the players in that allow me to get there. And it's always about evolving, isn't it? Football's about evolving. If you sit still or stand still, you're gonna end up getting fired. Let's be honest.
And then that's it. That's the golden thing that all managers would love to have and not all get is time at the end of the day, isn't it, Greg? It can be a brutal industry at times, but managers need it.
There's two things for me. There's probably time and there's context, because I think we're all experts at looking at teams or looking at clubs and giving our own opinion as to why the coaches may be playing like that, or why the players are playing in that particular style, or whatever's happening on the pitch, without having a true context of what's happening in the dressing room, in the boardroom, on the training pitch, from day to day, from week to week. You know, people don't know that. Marvin will tell us better than you and I will know, but you know, you just don't know that context that goes on as well.
Exactly.
Things can happen. Things can happen that you want to keep out the press, that you want to keep out the public eye. You know, you're dealing with a lot of individuals coming together at a football team. And I think that's what makes football so fascinating for the business world as well, about how you manage all those people coming together for that kind of greater good, if you like, to get that performance. And it's not just getting that performance once, is it? It's getting that performance 30, 40 times in a 9-month period, which can be bloody hard.
Yeah. I guess, Marvin, you will have experience of that context that Greg talks about, where people maybe don't appreciate the goings-on behind the scenes at a football club that actually play a huge part in on-pitch performance.
Yeah, at times it's like a school. It really is, you know, and the management team are the teachers. You know, you have to deal with stuff like in-house fighting. I'm not saying it happens at Livingston, but it's happened at other clubs I've been at. You know, players constantly come in late and yet they're still playing in the team. You know, there's people breaking discipline rules and then they're still playing in the team, whereas others are getting treated differently. There's so much to deal with. And, you know, what that's taught me is that I think as a coach, you have to have a line where, you know, no matter who you are, you know, if you ever set that line, if you break one of, you know, these rules that I've set, then everyone will be treated the same way. And I think that's how you get the best out of the team. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be on a football management course this year at Edinburgh Napier, and that was kind of one of the coursework, the things that we had to do was dealing with something like that. And I felt that, you know, I found it relatively easy because I don't refer back to my book, you know, I have things like this in there. So I think as a manager, you just have to be transparent and be honest, and you get the best out of your team. But there's also, yeah, like Greg said, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that people don't see, and managers have to try and, you know, be putting out fires at times.
Yeah. And you've touched on an analogy using the school, isn't it? It's a great analogy using the school and the coach being the teacher. I like that.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
That one's going to stick. Greg's going to take a wee bit of that, Marvin, into the coach anyway. But you touched on the work that you're doing, obviously, Edinburgh Napier there, and of course the Scottish FA coaching pathway that you're on. How much are you enjoying the theoretical and learning side of the coaching world so far?
I couldn't enjoy it anymore, honestly. You know, as a player, you think there's nothing that can top being a player or come close to it. And with coaching, for me, it's, you know, I honestly enjoy it so much. And the reason I think I do enjoy it so much, as a footballer, I was limited to what I could achieve because, don't get me wrong, I could have worked harder. It affected my game. But I'm never going to be a Messi or a Ronaldo. Whereas I see, as a coach, you know, there's no limitations to where you can go and what you can do. All the materials out there, you know, and even using this break now, for instance, I've learned so much. And yeah, I've signed up to, you know, various different sites and got direct debits coming out everywhere, which I'll probably need to calm down on because you stop getting paid. But you can evolve and you can keep evolving. And I genuinely believe the only person who will stop me getting to where I want to go to as a coach will be myself. You know, there might be some bad luck along the way. There might be one or two things that I can't prepare for. But as long as I'm as prepared as I possibly can be, I think I'll get to where I want to go. And as I said, as a coach, it's a lot different to a player because, you know, you can keep evolving, you can keep learning, and you can keep putting sessions on. You're not physically doing it yourself, you know. So if I don't get to where I want to get to, then I'll blame myself, definitely. But as a coach, I'm loving it, honestly. I really, really am.
That's a great message, isn't it, Greg? And Marvin's talking about being the most prepared he can be. And throughout this entire podcast, however long I've been recording now, he spoke about constantly, even from a young age as a player, taking notes and having that black book that he talks about. And yeah, being prepared is a big part of it, if not the biggest.
Andy Roxburgh, I remember Andy Roxburgh when he was in the kind of technical director role at the Scottish FA. And I remember being a student myself at the time at Jordan Hill College, and he was the first I had heard use the phrase, fail to prepare, prepares to fail, you know. And that's, I think, that probably sums up what Marvin's describing, you know, and everything that he's doing. You know, he's preparing himself for the best he can, but I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that the passion he seems to have for coaching as well. And that's important, because if you don't love it, then you're not going to put that work in. And because it can be thankless at times, and you know, I've spoke often enough on here about that kind of all-encompassing nature of it. So that preparation is absolutely vital, without a doubt, without a doubt.
Marvin, it's a question that it might be difficult to answer. You might be able to just go straight on into an answer here. But if you're to imagine that when the day comes that you get your first crack at a first-team job, do you think from all the people you've worked under that you've been speaking about on this podcast that you will take little bits from each of them? Do you think you'll have a style that is just natural to you that you'll take in? Or do you think it's a case of once you get there, you'll discover what you're?
No, I've actually thought about that. And in terms of when I do get the opportunity, well, the opportunity actually did come earlier on this season, which I can't touch on the club. I was offered to do something along those lines. When I do go into it, I'll be my own man. I'll have my own style. Yes, I'll take good from some managers, bad from others that I wouldn't, you know, certain situations, the way they've dealt with things, I wouldn't do it. You know, I've had some bad managers equally, you know, I've had some great managers, but I'll do it the Marvin Bartley way, because if I try and go in and do it the Eddie Howe way, the Sean Dyche way, I'm always going to be second best. You know, if I copy somebody else's blueprint, I can never do it as well as they can. Whereas if I make my own, it's one, it's going to be unique, and two, I'll be the best because nobody else is doing it. I definitely feel that, you know, I'm going to go about things my own way. And if I do fail, then it'll be because the Marvin Bartley way didn't work. I won't fail by, you know, trying to copy the Eddie Howe way and I failed to do it as well as he did, trying to copy the Sean Dyche way. As I said, I'll be a fool not to take little parts from each manager that I've had, but I definitely have my own way and, you know, my own culture that I want to create and my own philosophy and, you know, how I want to manage. So yeah, I do feel prepared for doing it. It's just about, you know, the right opportunity, and I'm just enjoying playing at the moment. You know, I'm still young enough to be playing. I've played a lot of games this season, but should opportunity come along, and you know, I think I'll be suitably prepared.
Yeah, Greg, we touched on Marvin's passion there. We talked about how prepared he is. There's another side of it, that belief that he clearly has as well, and that self-confidence that you need to have if you're going to be successful in most walks of life, but particularly in football.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing? You know, we call it a coaching podcast, Lewis, but not once yet have we come on here and started talking about X's and O's and how to balance a back four and how to play through the midfield. And, you know, I've written scribbled some words down there. You know, Marvin's talked about culture, philosophy, mindset, preparation, learning, passion, and as you said, their belief. So what a melting pot that is. You know, it's just absolutely incredible, I think.
I know, it's fascinating to listen to, Marvin, and that, I guess now for you, it is very much putting all this into practice, as we spoke about. You said that you had an opportunity. I guess a big part of it as well, though, Marvin, is knowing when it's the right time to take it on, knowing when maybe the time is right to put the playing days behind you, and I guess making that decision.
Years yet.
Exactly.
Luckily for me, it was a mixture of doing both, playing also, and that's why, you know, I was lucky enough to do some work at BBC with Kenny Miller. And as I said to you, if I meet somebody who, you know, I want to take an experience from, and luckily enough, I've met Kenny before this opportunity came along, and he had tried it at Livingston. You know, I spoke to Kenny the other day on Instagram. I said, "Can it work?" And he said, "It can definitely work. But you have to have the right people around you to make it work." Yeah. I just felt that it wasn't the right club for me to do it at. You know, there's no need for me to rush. I'm very much of the belief that, you know, I'm doing my coaching badges now because I don't need them, rather than coming out of football and thinking, wow, where do I go now? Exactly. Oh, I need my coaching badges. You know, so I think I'm doing things with a lot less pressure. I have another 2 years on my contract, and should something change during that time that I want to go and explore, I'll speak to the club and do that. But I just felt, yeah, that opportunity probably wasn't the right one for me. And as Greg says, I wanted to play on for many years yet. And if I can combine the two, then, you know, so be it. I'm very open to doing anything, but it has to be the right opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, we've got an all-rounder on our hands here, though, Greg, because we haven't even talked about the fact, the media stuff that you are doing, Marvin. I guess that must be an enjoyable side of things as well. You enjoy the media?
Yeah, it's an enjoyable side. You know, when I first was approached about doing the radio, it wasn't something I'd ever thought about. But I like to put myself out of my comfort zone. And this probably sounds really, really weird. You know, I want to jump into deep waters and see, you know, can you swim or can you do it? And the radio was one of those things. And I jumped into it and I found it okay. And, you know, the responses I got were relatively good. And then the TV was the next step, you know, doing live TV. And I jumped into that. And it's different experiences, you know, and I can kind of, I think once you've done these things, you can draw on those experiences, good or bad, you know, and you can say to yourself, well, if you've done that, Marvin, then you can do this. You know, you've been playing football for, you know, a long time now. So if you can do the TV and jump into TV and radio, why can't you go into football management? Why can't you go into coaching? You know, you're much more prepared for that than you are those other two things, and you've managed to complete those quite well.
Another thing, though, as well, Marvin, is that particularly with current day managers as well, see having an awareness and an understanding and an appreciation for the media and how it works. And we've spoke about on this podcast a few times, Greg, I think we've referenced the Jurgen Klopp effect that he's had, where all elements of a football club working together. So see having an understanding on all aspects of the game, and that includes the media side of things, that's huge, and particularly current day management.
Yeah, you definitely need it. You know, if you think you're going to go and be a manager, and all it's going to be about is trying to get 3 points on a Saturday and dealing with players, then you're in for a terrible surprise. Yeah. You know, there's so much more to it now. Like you said, so many more people want access to you. So many, you know, whether it's social media, you know, you might be asking questions on there, doing press conferences, you know, and you have to have your wits about you, because, you know, going and speaking to the media after a 3-0 win, it's easy days. But what about losing 5-0? You know, how are you going to conduct yourself when the chips are down and people are asking about your job? You know, are you going to lose your job? And at that point, you're going to be extremely angry, but you have to separate yourself away from it. And, you know, whether you want to go in there and just give a calm interview or whatever, but you have to represent not only yourself, but your football club at this point. So there's so many different things to it. And, you know, working in the media has allowed me to do that and probably feel more comfortable with it than other players might feel with it, because, you know, they've not had that opportunity. So I'm always so grateful for the opportunities that I've had, but, you know, it's all coming together, hopefully, for me to one day be a successful manager, because people have asked me, do you want to do media or manager? But my passion, as Greg spoke about earlier, is coaching and managing. You know, that there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And interesting, as you say, Lewis, though, that developing those relationships with the media, and we spoke earlier about the manager or the head coach needing that time as well, but you know, arguably developing those softer skills, developing how you can work with a media, might essentially give you a bit more time to implement what you want as well.
Well, ultimately, I've always said this, that's where the fans get their perception of the manager and the team, is through whether it be club media or external media. And it's the fans that put the pressure on in the stands every weekend. So the buy time with the fans gives you that little bit longer. I think managers that have that awareness and understanding of the importance of that as a mediator and a go-between are the ones that seem to do the best at points. And it's usually, all, like you say, Marvin, it's how you handle yourself when you get beat is probably the biggest part about a manager and how much of an effect it's going to have.
Yeah, definitely. You know, how often do we look at sports scene and a team who's won, but if the manager's being interviewed, you're not really switched on to it. But then the manager who's just lost, you're like, oh, let me see what he has to say. Exactly. You know, let me switch into this. And
that's true.
And we, as humans, that's just how we are. You know, we want to see how is this person reacting in, you know, in difficult times. Not when you're winning every single game. I want to see what it's like, you know, when you've lost five in a row and the fans are calling for your head and you're being asked these questions. I'm going to switch on to that. Not that I support the team, but I'm just interested. Yeah. We all do it.
It's not. I think it's human instinct, Marvin. You're right. But I mean, Greg, throughout this podcast, it's been fascinating listening to Marvin from early playing days to where he is in his career now. Certainly painting a very rounded picture of what I guess it's going to take for him and how prepared he is to go into the coaching world.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hopefully see him on the A licence and progress further still. So. Thanks again to Marvin for his time. It's just been for people to, you know, it always just blows me away how people at Marvin will be giving of their time and sharing of that knowledge that they have. And, you know, it's that humility shines through as well at times, Lewis, because they maybe don't realise just, you know, humble their being and sharing all that for us and hopefully the listeners as well. So it's, yeah, you're right. It's great to hear, and you know, that recognition as well that Marvin has, that there's some hellish bumps to come in the road, but he knows he's trying to prepare himself as best he possibly can for them.
Yeah, and overall, Marvin, it all comes from a passion for the game, really, all these aspects of what you're doing in football, playing, coaching, media. It's a love for the game ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you've hit the nail on the head there. It's a love for the game. If I didn't love the game, you know, I wouldn't be doing nearly the amount of things that I am. You know, I'll go and play matches, go home, and that'll be it. But I love football. You know, everything in my life is based around football. You know, I go and play matches when I'm at home. I'm looking at coaching videos. Even after a game on a Saturday, you know, on a Sunday, my day off spent, you know, looking online at different things. And I just love the game. And, you know, I think I've been relatively successful as a player, but as a manager, I want to be twice as successful. And in order to do that, you know, I'm going to have to start learning from now and put everything in place that I have done for since the age of 24. You know, I'm going to have to continue that right till I retire from coaching and managing.
Yeah. Well, now's the time, I'm sure, that you'll be working plenty without any football. So I guess from myself and Greg Marvin, I just want to thank you for coming on and sharing everything with us and wish you all the very best as well in the future.
No, thanks for having me. Honestly, I appreciate it. As I said, I'm sitting at home doing nothing. So, no, honestly, it's been brilliant to talk and to talk football, as I said, because I love it.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover. And to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.